Welcome back, everybody, as we get going here on a Tuesday afternoon. He's Adrian Broaddus. I'm Steve Kaplowitz. Just the two of us today. We should play that song. Just the two of us. We can make it if we try. Just the two of us. You and I. Hey, we got a lot to talk about over the course of the next few hours. We get you ready to go for Chihuahuas baseball tonight. Hags will call the action. I'm a little depressed today. I'm not going to lie to you. Rangers hockey season is over. Not only did they lose, they sucked. I mean, can you imagine playing a game seven? You got all these veterans, all this experience, you know, Stanley Cup champions, Hall of Famers on your roster, and you can't even score one goal, and you basically lay just a colossal egg in a winner-take-all. That is, you look old, you look slow, you look like you don't belong. That's what happened last night. So once again, first the Bruins, now the Rangers. This is what happens sometimes in hockey in the postseason. You know, this, you never know. You never know what's going to happen until they have to drop the puck.
Yeah, it was a depressing game yesterday if you're a Rangers fan. I just expected more. I'm disappointed in their outcome yesterday. And now I feel like what we have in front of us is a batch of new teams, a la the Kraken, a la the Devils, and, you know, younger teams like that. And then we got a pair of Canadian teams that might find their way in as well, with the Oilers playing the way they are, having a great round two match up against Las Vegas, and you have the Maple Leafs getting things started tonight against the Panthers, who, like you mentioned, beat out Boston in that first round. So, yeah, even though the Rangers are left behind, man, playoff pucks is heating up in a big way.
It is. It really, really is. So, anyway, just as we mentioned before, getting going here on the show today. We can talk pucks. We can talk playoff hoops with you. We can talk baseball. We can talk recruiting. How about last night when the Zeriko Onyema video started to circulate about him getting off the escalator at the airport and his former head coach greet him with a bro hug out there before taking him out? That was Rodney Terry as Zerik getting his Texas visit in starting last night and today. And I'm assuming, they're still in the middle of it right now. But that is an interesting storyline since the Longhorns are in his Final Four, along with Tech, Vanderbilt, and Ole Miss.
Hey, a big shout out to Steven at DJ Rookie Bear, who threw out the tweet, who, by the way, you know he was stalking. You know he was creeping up on Zeriko Onyema, trying to see what he was doing. I mean, he probably recognized him, DJ Rookie Bear, a known UTEP basketball fan. And he's at the airport, at the Austin airport, obviously, and he sees Zeriko Onyema going down the escalator. What does he do? He videotapes his interaction with Texas head coach Rodney Terry, the same Rodney Terry that recruited Zeriko Onyema out of San Antonio to El Paso to be a minor in the first place. So the embrace was great. The video was even better. And body language was excellent right there for Zeriko Onyema embracing his former coach in Rodney Terry.
I can't believe the video that you shared was from DJ Rookie Bear. That's very
right,
cool.
Right. Isn't that hilarious?
That is hilarious.
This is coming from a UTEP fan who is on the prowl, who is definitely there a little bit stalkerish, like I said. But nonetheless, this made the rounds, has over 10,000 views right now, and you know Longhorn fans wanted to see that video as well.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. Man, that's wild. That is absolutely wild. By the way, I enjoyed that video last night when it happened. I was like, huh, who's shooting this? That was my first question. I can't believe it. And, you know, you found the UTEP backpack. What gave him away? Maybe the fact that he's 6'8" and he's got a UTEP backpack. You figured he's probably an athlete.
Yeah, exactly. Come on, this is not hard at all. Also, Zeriko Onyema is a pretty recognizable guy. I mean, he just look at him with his hair, the way it's styled. He had it up yesterday, but still, it's his signature longer hair. So yeah, you get it right there from Zeriko Onyema.
Knicks just got a break. That is Jimmy Butler ruled out for tonight's game, too. So there you go. That breaking news just happened within the first minute of our show. No Jimmy Butler tonight, and believe me, That's definitely music to the ears of Knicks fans who need a win in the worst way tonight to try to even this thing up at a game apiece.
Yeah, it looked like he injured his ankle pretty badly in that first game. I would say that the other supporting cast members, we talked about Kyle Lowry earlier this week, they were the ones from Miami to close out that series. I'm worried about Jimmy Butler's status. Him being out due to the sprained ankle, that's going to definitely limit his mobility, even if he's back in Miami for game three. Who knows at what strength he'll be at? And it's a shame for Jimmy Butler, who's been playing out of this world right now. Best playoff player right now, in my opinion, of anybody left.
Maybe since the Heat already have a win in New York and they know that Butler is not near 100%, why risk it? Like, if this was game seven, maybe they would tape him up. He would just limp through the game and give it everything he's got. But worst case, you go back to Miami tied at a game apiece. So it's not even, the mission accomplished. They already won the first game. So for Miami right now, they're just playing with the house money at this point.
Yeah, we're also talking about most of these series being every other day with the exception of travel days. So you get the 2 days in between, as it should be, right? And, we should have quicker games, when we're talking about second round playoff matchups. So I hope that's the case. I hope that we get a chance to see Jimmy Butler back in action. It looks like actually on my schedule, game three is Saturday. So that would be a bit of a break right now for Jimmy Butler, figuring he's got from Sunday to Saturday to recover on that sprained ankle. Let's see what happens. Let's see if he's active for game three. And tonight, I just expect the Knicks to really put it on the Heat to win this one.
Oh, I would think they do too. I mean, you don't know for sure, but I would think that'd be the case.
Well, maybe I should go back on my word, Steve, because last night I thought that Philly resting Joel Embiid was done. They were cooked. Yeah. They were in the water. And James Harden had something to say for that. The Celtics collapsed in the end of that game. Very disappointed with Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Al Horford, Marcus Smart. Go down the list with the Celtics. Just a colossal, colossal failure letting that one slip away. You don't let Joel Embiid, the 76ers win that game yesterday. I couldn't believe it.
Well, we talked about this, didn't we? We talked about this, and I even said, wow, all of a sudden, after it was, I think it was the end of the first half or the end of the first quarter of the first half, I said, hey, the Sixers are going to make this a series. And you predicted Boston in five.
I was like, no way. I was like, no way at all.
Well, Harden was amazing. Let's be honest. The beard, right. The beard was out of his mind last night.
I like his supporting cast members, not the PJ Tuckers of the world, but I really enjoyed the game yesterday from Tyrese Maxey. He's showing why he can be a starting guard for a relevant team in the league, and so I like him alongside James Harden.
You didn't like PJ Tucker's accidental punch to the goods of Jason Tatum during the game?
Yeah, he has that kind of game to him. I mean, look at his stats. 0 points, 5 rebounds, 2 steals, but he's +6 in terms of efficiency. He's an efficient player whenever he steps on the floor.
Yeah, and a punch to the goods. Yeah. That should be part of the stats.
Yeah, he's a little dirty at times. Well, yeah. He's an enforcer,
There we go. That's the word to use, enforcer. By the way, a lot of NBA talk. We'll do that coming up at 5:20 when Dave DeFore joins us for our weekly chat. Not surprised that the Grizzlies do not plan to re-sign Dylan Brooks.
Yeah, I don't like this because, first off, I was not a fan of Dylan Brooks, the way he handled himself in this series, but it's the culture that Memphis created and allowed in their own locker room. I mean, Ja Morant, everything he did off the court in February to kind of see this team spiral out of control, it culminates to this, like Dylan Brooks going out. I guess it's all right, but for them to say there's no way out of this world that they would actually re-sign Dylan Brooks to a deal, I just don't like the Grizzlies saying stuff like that, even if they don't plan to re-sign him.
Yeah, I understand. I get you. Our phone number, 505-6009, as we get going here on the program, 505-6009. You can also tweet us. At 600 ESPN El Paso. That's at 600 ESPN El Paso. And a lot more to talk about over the course of the next 2 hours, 30 minutes. I did see that there was some UTEP recruiting news starting to trickle in a little bit. And, hey, whenever we find that there are guards hitting the portal, all of a sudden, UTEP trying to get involved. This is an interesting one because it's a guy that averaged about 17 a game from the University of Missouri-Kansas City, Shamari Allen. But look at the teams involved. Penn State, they're the team that took away that post player from UTEP that they wanted, Hicks, who they thought they had a shot at getting from Temple. He goes to Penn State, so they're in the mix. UCF, College of Charleston, Florida, Hofstra, Robert Morris, Western Kentucky, Southern Illinois, New Mexico State, Richmond, and UTEP. So we will see. We will see what happens. By the way, according to verbal commits, I don't think this broke yet, but I did find it interesting that former UCF small forward Brandon Suggs, who started at East Carolina, has committed to New Mexico State.
I saw that. Yeah, I saw that was a commitment from earlier. The interesting thing with UTEP specifically, just to go back to the player that they're after, I would say that UTEP has something right now that a lot of other teams, maybe like a Penn State, a Florida, you know, those teams right there might not be able to do. And that is promise or at least guarantee some path to immediate playing time or being a focal point of this team as it stands right now. And what I'm saying is, if this guy Shamari Allen, who is transferring from UMKC, would look at UTEP, he might see this school as a perfect place for him to take the reins as the starting point guard or at least a starting role in the backcourt. That would be the biggest push that UTEP has on their end to try to land some of these guys.
Yeah, no, that's true. That is very true. By the way, in East Carolina, Suggs was about a 10-point-a-game guy, 10 points, 4 boards, and about 2.5 assists. Last season at UCF, his production dipped to 6.5 points per game, didn't start much, where he did start with East Carolina. So he was a teammate of Tristan Newton during his 3 seasons out at East Carolina. So he'll have 1 year left, and Suggs will join the mix next year at New Mexico State.
Yeah, it's another addition for Hooten. He's got to round out that entire roster. Not a big surprise to me, but somebody who can have immediate playing opportunities knowing he has that playing experience in his past. So good land right there.
And then they also got Jalen Jackson Posey, who was at Stephen F. Austin. He's another one who just committed. So, you know, I think that was officially announced earlier today. And here's a guy who is 6'2", from Midland, played at Stephen F. Austin, and averaged also that 6.7 points per game. Seems like he's got a lot of guys that are in that 6 to 8 point range right now, and he's trying to get as many of those players on board to have a deep roster as he can next year.
Yeah, it sounds like he's bringing a lot of balance right away. Jason Hooten getting guys who were kind of on the fringe and who've wanted to break out as that player to be either a routine starter, somebody who can earn a lot of minutes. So for Jason Hooten right now, the opportunity's there, and for these players, it seems like they can get a quick opportunity to actually see the floor if they go to, you know, the Aggies.
All right, so we're just getting started here on the show. 16 past. Good to have you with us on a Tuesday edition of the program. I'm looking at questions on the app that are coming in. I'm looking at tweets as well. We're busy. We're very busy. As we send it off to Charlie One, let's get our first traffic update of the afternoon. Back here on the show as Sports Talk continues. Welcome back, everybody. He's Adrian Broaddus. I'm Steve Kaplowitz. We come your way here each and every afternoon on 600 ESPN El Paso. Our telephone number is 505-6009. Get you right on in and through to the program. This came in from Robert on the mobile app, powered by First American Bank. Robert says, any news on UTEP recruits? Well, Robert, we talked a little bit about the player from Missouri-Kansas City earlier when you asked any news on UTEP recruits, and I don't blame you. I mean, that's, to me, a very valid question. It is. They've been after some guards. We know that. I haven't seen if UTEP's in on any forwards. Have you? to try to replace Z?
No, I have not seen any.
But they are looking at guards right now.
Yeah, yeah. Those are pretty much the only ones I've seen so far. A couple guards that UTEP is after right now at least have been reported on. There's probably some other ones, Steve, that have been kind of quiet or mum on. I'm not surprised if those are, you know, if that's the case. But yeah, that's definitely going to be something that we have to monitor, the other UTEP players that they're going to be, trying to recruit.
Yeah, that's true, and we don't know. I mean, is Shamari Allen the only one, or are there a few others too?
Elijah Hawkins is the other one, the Howard transfer. He's reportedly heard from the Miners. He averaged 12.9 points a game and 6 assists this past year. Also a DMV area prospect. We know the DMV area guys on this current UTEP team include guys like Kevin Kalu, Derek Hamilton, and Otis Frazier.
Okay, all right. So there is a pipeline that we've seen so far.
Yeah, and they've gone after other DMV prospects this offseason, just have not landed any of them.
Hmm. All right. Let's keep things going. We've got Memphis Drew joining us next. How difficult is it for you to watch the rest of the NBA playoffs knowing your team is out?
Yeah, I only wish we'd had a full, healthy roster. I think we would battle the Lakers very well. I think we were favored, actually, before the series started. But
yeah, you were.
Those injuries, Adams and Brandon Clark and Kennard got hurt, and Morant was not playing fully healthy. So Lakers beat us. Injuries are part of the game.
They always are. Hey, by the way, do you agree with the Lakers, Grizzlies' decision not to re-sign Dylan Brooks? Do you like that move?
Oh, absolutely. He takes bad shots. And he had an off year. I think we can upgrade at that position without costing us too much.
What bothered you more, the bad shots or the reputation as being a dirty player?
Well, the talk and the bad shots, that I didn't like that at all. Yeah, I think we can upgrade that position either in the draft or – you know, we got some draft choices. We're under the cap. Yeah, we can do better than that at that position.
Hey, by the way, how do you think? How do you see the Lakers series playing out? Since they get Golden State. Here are two teams that were essentially at the bottom of the Western Conference, now doing battle to see who can get to the Western Conference Finals.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I favor Golden State, and those 3 points are gonna do the Lakers in. Those 3-point shots, 3 is better than 2. So I got a favorite Golden State and the experience. They're the defending world champions. I favor Golden State.
Where do you put Steph among the greats historically? And I don't want to just talk about that 50-point performance against Sacramento in Game 7, but we were talking about it yesterday. We started looking at his numbers career playoff-wise against Kobe and kind of measuring those two up against each other. Different types of players, totally different types of players. I mean, you know, if Steph has that same killer instinct that Kobe has, I think the emotion was different. Like, Kobe kind of had more of the Jordan-like emotion when he brought to the game and played, and Steph just always seems so cool, calm, collected, that nothing really phases him. And yet, you know, when he buries teams, he does it differently.
Yeah, I put him at least in the top 20 players of all time. Where would you put him? Would you put him in the top 10? Where would you put him?
Man, that's so tough. I mean, first off, I feel like if we're putting Steph in the top 10, then what we're basically doing is we're ignoring history. Right? We are. We're ignoring history because chances are if Steph's in the top 10, well, LeBron's got to be in the top 10. You can't have Steph ahead of LeBron. And if that's the case and you start to, you know, look at everybody going down the list, what about Kevin Durant and all these other guys that are currently playing the game today? And if that's the case, well, then what about Dr. J and Larry Bird and Magic Johnson and, Oscar Robertson and guys like that and Wilt and Russell, I mean, Kareem. That's the hardest part about really looking at the greatest all time. I mean, there are so many amazing players that have played the game of basketball. And you're right. I think that the top 20 all-time is much more realistic than the top 10, because just rattling those names to go along with all the contemporaries and who's played in between makes it a really, and of course Jordan, makes it a really tough argument, doesn't it?
Yes, sir. And but I as far as guards go, the guard position, I'd probably put him in the top five.
Would you?
Yeah.
All right, so let's say we put him in the top five, okay? We put him in the top five. Now, that means you're putting him in with Jordan, correct? It also means you're probably, it means you're also probably putting him in with Magic, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So you've just put him in with Jordan and Magic. That and Steph would make three. What about Kobe? You putting him ahead of Kobe?
That's close. That's close.
And then what do you do? What about guys like Oscar Robertson, Jerry West? And then you start to go down that list. And then you look at, you know, some of the other guys that have played the game so well over the years. You got Cousy, who led the point role for Boston all those seasons and played that role. And then, you know, you go and look at all these other greats that have been part of the game forever. That's the toughest thing is when you really start to make that list of the top five guards of all time and you realize who else is on that list, you're like, well, maybe it's a little tougher than I thought, right?
Yeah, if you look in playing both sides of the ball, you could say Gary Payton was an excellent guard. And,
sure.
You know, Oscar Robinson, as you say, he rebounded and assisted.
Yeah, and don't forget, you've also got John Stockton. You've got Chris Paul. Yeah. We mentioned Isaiah. You got Jerry West, Cousy, Allen Iverson, Kobe Bryant, Walt Frazier, Dwayne Wade. You know, I mean, you just go down the list. Clyde Drexler is also a guard. I mean, my goodness, that's the scariest part. Is you realize you're looking at a list of a who's who right now in the NBA history.
Hey, but shooting the ball, you got to give him credit. He's the greatest, I think, of all those guards.
You could say that if you're talking just a pure shooter.
Yeah.
There is nobody that's ever been better than Steph. I agree. I would not argue that at all. Not at all.
And I'm disappointed in our Showboats. See, the Memphis Showboats, they haven't won a game this year. We need Brady or Ezekiel Elliott. You took Aaron Rodgers.
Are you talking a little USFL football right now?
I'm just kidding.
I like that.
I was just wondering, I don't see how they continue to operate the USFL and the XFL. They get network TV contracts, but... How do you think that's going to end up?
I'm so interested in that, and I appreciate the call, Drew. I really do. As far as how it's going to end up, I mean, that's the thing, okay? They brought the USFL back. The XFL is back for the third go-around right now. And how many of these leagues are actually going to be around in 2 to 3 or 5 years from now? Adrian, I think that's the number one question. We know the NFL is not going anywhere, but these other leagues, I mean, the XFL has The Rock backing it. And it's big dollars, big, big dollars. I give the USFL a chance just for trying to bring it back, but I feel like it's almost an afterthought right now.
I think the one big thing that's driving this, I was reading a great story on The Athletic that talked about this, both the USFL and XFL has capitalized on the gambling market. And they believe that the gambling markets, your FanDuels, your DraftKings, they will continue to fuel products like those, the USFL and the XFL, because of how much dollars are being thrown at these leagues for gambling.
Smart. I mean, that's, hey, you got to find your niche, right? You got to do it.
That's
and you know that gambling is sports these days. And the more you embrace gambling, the better chance you have to stay long term.
Yeah, and that's what they're doing right now. They're partnering up with these big gambling websites. It's all about the online gambling, I guess, for most of these organizations like the XFL and USFL. So that's how they're expecting to stay afloat, at least for the next 3 years. That's what I was reading, that they're pretty solid for the next 3 years.
All right. Hey. Bottom of the hour as we continue. We got a caller ready to go. I'm looking at this list. It's a who's who of guards. It's just ridiculous. I mean, it really is. I don't have a problem with Steph Curry being the greatest shooting guard of all time. That's fine, even though he's played the point. I've probably never been a better shooter than Steph, but you really start to say and start to look at, well, you really going to put him in the top five with that list?
Oh, yeah, easy. Not even close. Not even close.
Easy.
I think he could be better than Magic right now as number one. I mean, behind point guard, greatest point guard of all time. Yeah, and I can do the history thing with you. I mean, it's really not that hard.
All right, we'll do it. We'll do it. We come back right after this. Let's go to Adrian and get this SportsCenter update. All right, Adrian, thank you very much. This is Brian from downtown.
That's correct.
Oh, this I got to hear. All right, Brian's joining us next on the program, 33 past the hour. Hey, Brian, how are you?
I've been better, Steve. I've been better.
What's wrong, Brian? What's wrong?
I'm about one beer commercial away from never listening to another sports talk show ever again.
What happened? Too many beer commercials?
No. The laziness and reliance on discussing something that can never, ever be resolved. What's with the top 10 of this and the top 15 of that, the top 50 of that, and all of the quarterbacks, point guards? It's just, you can't, it depends on the individuals, the decade.
Yep.
You know, so why continue? It's laziness.
No, I feel like, here's the thing. The reason I like to bring it up is this. I like to bring it up because when you look at all these athletes today, okay, I feel like we're forgetting about the greats of yesteryear. I really do. And, you know, I grew up in the 70s and 80s, but I have an appreciation for the athletes that came before my time because of my dad and all the stuff I've read and watched in history. I've always tried to pride myself on being a sports historian and really knowing all that. But I feel like nowadays we get so caught up in the present time, we don't remember and don't give credit to those that really were the greats in their time. And it's interesting.
I get it. But you'll never be able to win an argument that's 25 years old. Hey, listen, the best point guard in the history of the NBA is Tiny Archibald. He's the only guy to ever leave the league in scoring and assists in the same season. End of conversation.
Yeah, fair enough. You want, and by the way, Hall of Famer. Hall of Famer, right. And a former minor. So there's another great to add to that list.
Right.
100%.
Yeah, but there was no Twixing and texting and all of that sort of, you know what I'm saying?
I know.
And he played for a lower middle school, UTEP. And I'm just saying.
Now let me ask you this. Okay. You've watched basketball since you were a kid, all right? I'm not going to say how old you are, but you've been watching basketball a long time. That being said, have you ever seen anyone in all the years you've watched the game shoot a basketball the way Steph Curry does?
No, I think he's the best offensive guard in the history of the game. But his statistics will back that up.
Yep. I know.
Everything else is subjective.
That's true. That is true. And you could do that. And you could say that. You could say statistically, that's one thing. You can do that. But, you know, just shooting a basketball, I mean, it's been amazing to watch it.
But you know what? But there seems to be a lot of weight put on championships. This is a team sport. Individual effort has nothing to do with a championship. You can't win if you don't have a supporting cast. So you can't say this quarterback didn't win a Super Bowl or only won one Super Bowl, so he's sixth on my list because this other guy won three. I mean, I that's why I don't want to listen to it anymore. It's just repetitive, and it's tiring, and it's tedious.
All right. Listen, I get it. You know what?
There's so many better things you could be talking about.
Well, the truth is, if you've been watching these basketball playoff games, it's been fun to watch. It's been pretty entertaining so far.
Yes, I agree. And you know what? I'm the guy that didn't watch NBA the last two seasons.
So what made you decide to tune in now?
For some reason, I missed it, and a lot of the political nonsense has faded away. You know, I'm not going to go into what political nonsense I'm talking about. I think you know what it is. But I think that pretty much has petered out, the emphasis on foreign countries and on racism and things like that. It's not mentioned as much as it was, and it brought me back. It threw me out. Hey, there's a lot of guys that just, and I'm talking about, and former NBA greats that will never watch the NBA again.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. But it's not just NBA. There's former baseball greats that want to watch baseball and football. It's like that. Just the way things have evolved. But you want to know something? Sports is supposed to be an escape. It's supposed to be an escape from real life and a chance to just, you know, enjoy something that really is a break from your day-to-day activities.
Well, you know, and saying that, I can't tell you how glad I am. You're not going to wipe the smile off my face because of what the Dodgers have done in the last week or so. Mm. Muncy is back. I mean, they're only, what, four games above 500, but they are first in the NL West.
That's
so
true.
I mean, I'm a happy camper. I can't say that all sports I don't like it. I'm just saying that I would really enjoy listening to programs like yours. I love it when you have original programming. I don't care if it's horse racing or if it's hockey or, you know, or if it's Mumbly Peg or Tiddlywinks. If there's a local, you know, angle to it, and we've got some people to talk about. I mean, I've been immersed in middle school track this season. I'm telling you, I go to middle school track meets, photograph the district track meet last Friday night at Bowie. I'm telling you, we got some real future stars in this town because I'm seeing these guys that colleges are looking at, and they're in the eighth grade.
If this was your last call to the show, you went out with a bang.
Well, it's not going to be my last call, but I mean, it may be the last. And I may have slightly overreacted. I can always turn to another channel if I don't like what I'm listening to, and then turn back 15, 20, a half an hour later, hopefully that the subject has changed. I mean, I can do that. I'm just saying that you're too talented and there's too much original programming out there just to beat a dead horse over and over again.
I will say this. When we did years ago, about 2 or 3 years ago, the greatest UTEP players of all time voted on by the fans and by El Paso. That was fun because we never did that before. It was a project that lasted weeks. We put them into brackets and we crowned a champ. And that actually turned out to be really interesting, giving El Pasoans a chance to vote on these matchups like an NCAA tournament.
Yep, it was original programming, wasn't it?
All right, I got you. Appreciate the call. I will come up with something else original soon enough, I promise you. All right, Brian. There we go. Brian from downtown, frustrated that we could just always go back to the greatest of all time debate and just beat a dead horse, which we do sometimes. We do, like every other
sports. That was a depressing call. That was, I mean, you know what? That's our job, Steve. We got to look at this in a history. We look at this for every sport. It doesn't matter if it's basketball. Do it for baseball. Do it for football. We do this all the time.
Mm-hmm. No, you're right. Absolutely. I just, hey, we don't do it all. We don't do it all the time, but when we do it,
right,
we try to at least make it subjective enough to where we include everybody. And I get that.
Relevant.
Don't worry.
We'll make it relevant.
We'll argue during the break. All right? We'll do that. We'll make our arguments during the commercial break because you told me you were going to throw in how Steph's the greatest point guard of all time. So we'll see how that
goes. Like Brian says, it's subjective. It doesn't matter.
All right. 41 passed as we continue here on Sports Talk. I'll be back with more in a moment. 600 ESPN El Paso. Welcome, Ray, to the program. What's going on, Ray?
Hey, Steve, Adrian. I just want to say, you know what? You guys do a fabulous job of incorporating both the national and local scenes. And I just think, you know, and I totally respect what your previous caller was saying, but I got to say, from another perspective and a different angle, I think you guys do a fabulous job because El Paso has become such a melting pot. As you guys know, I'm from Los Angeles. I'm from San Pedro, California. I've lived here now 20 years, and I still say I'm from California. I live here, but I'm from California. And I appreciate the national scene because people like myself, you know, maybe at times do get a little tired of hearing about the local scene because we're not necessarily from here and we didn't go down that road that all you guys who are from here have lived. Although we appreciate it, especially me, myself, working in the high school scene, I do appreciate that. But, you know, with the base and all the people that are here from around the country, you know, you got to bring in that national flavor. And, you know, you do a great job of bringing in all the local heroes and talking to the people about the local sports here. But, you know, I do appreciate that once a week when you bring in Jay Jaffe and we can hear all about the national baseball scene and even throw a beer pick in the way as well. And, you know, when you do that, it just brings us all together once again because as the show is called, it's called Sports Talk, rightly so. It's about sports. It's not El Paso Talk. It's about sports. And, you know, to be able to talk about all the sports that are going on, you know, when I'm watching the local news sometimes, I do get a little turned off when I only get the national bit of it on that little feed across the bottom of the screen, and all I can see is a score when some major things did happen in national sports. But like I said, you guys incorporated and melted and married all together so very well, for everybody included. You know, when you look about what's the number one thing that everybody can talk about, argue, debate, it's who is the greatest of all in whatever sport you're talking about. I, for one, have always said there are no greatest of all times. There's the greatest of that time, because at that time, what was involved? What kind of equipment? What kind of technology? What kind of players? What were the rules like at that time? And things just keep changing and evolving to where, okay, that guy was the greatest at that time because he played under those circumstances. But that guy was the greatest at that time because he played under those circumstances. You know, I'm so looking forward to this matchup between Steph and LeBron. And, you know, being a Lakers fan, I'm not a huge LeBron fan, but he has grown on me. I can tell you that. You know, just looking at the way these guys have gone at it in the past. And, you know, from then to now, when they first met to what it is now, the game has changed even then. I mean, I got to say, you guys have probably seen it change more times than I have in everything you guys have done, correct?
Absolutely. 100%. 100%.
You know, and this series that's coming up, Steve, I don't think a lot of people have paid much attention to this, but one thing I did notice in the NBA playoffs that are happening right now, this is one of the greatest NBA playoff series that we've had in all of NBA for a long time, because if you look at these series, every one of them, with the exception of probably Phoenix and Denver, every one of them now is a rivalry. You got the Sixers and the Celtics. That's back in the glory days. You've got I-95, Miami and the Knicks going at it. Now you've got the Southern California rivalry, L.A. and San Francisco. And then you've got Phoenix and Denver. And none of them have more than an hour and 45-minute flight to get to where they're going. So there's really no travel involved. So that's never going to become a factor unless you get some bad weather. But other than that, you've got teams that are going to be well-rested and going at it. And this matchup tonight, I just can't wait to see this series. I'm really, really looking forward to the Lakers, because right now these guys really remind me a lot of 2020. Nobody gave them much of a chance. I mean, you think about it. Where'd they come from? 0-5 and 2-10 and having to scrape and claw their way right at the end of the season to try to get into that play-in. And now we're into the semis against the defending champs, and we're one series away from getting into the semis. And who knows where it goes after that, because they get there. It looks like it probably would be against Denver. That'll be another rematch of 2020.
All I know is this. Do you think it seems like it's going to go 7? I feel like it's just destined for 7, don't you?
I thoroughly, totally agree with that. And I think all the focus has been so much on, and they've said it all the morning long on sports TV shows, LeBron versus Steph, LeBron versus Steph. Don't you think these other guys got something to say about it? Don't you think they're all sitting back saying, hey, we're playing too. What about us? Now I think it's, quote unquote, the others. Who of the others is going to make a statement? Who is going to say, hey, we're in this thing too, you know? And which one of them on either side is going to come through and say, it's about all of us, not just him. We're all in this together.
Ray, you said it best. Adrian, anything you want to add before you wrap it up with Ray?
I think he said everything right there. I have Warriors in 6, unfortunately. I'm rooting for the Lakers. I'm a LeBron guy for sure, but I just don't like the matchup for the Lakers in this one, even though the Lakers have won 3 out of the 4 times they played in the regular season.
So if you're picking Warriors in 6, that means, wait, you think the Warriors are going to beat the Lakers on their own home floor?
Yeah.
Wow. All right.
Let me just end with this. If you can capture it all together, and I don't know if it can happen for 4 games, but I tell you this, the Lakers that played on Friday night against the Grizzlies will beat the Warriors who played the Kings on Sunday night 4 times.
I like that.
I agree.
Bold
with that
prediction. All right. We'll just see if that team can show up for 4 wins. That's the biggest key, more than anything else.
That's what remains to be seen.
Appreciate you, man. Thanks for the call. 1 hour in the books. We continue here on Sports Talk. When we come back, hour 2, Dave DeFore. Talk more hoops with Dave 25 minutes from now with TheAthletic.com and 600 ESPN El Paso. Hour number 2 is underway. Welcome back, everybody. From the 600 ESPN El Paso, River Oaks Properties, Schoolyard Sports Studios, along with Adrian Broaddus, I'm Steve Kaplowitz. This is Sports Talk. Here on 600 ESPN El Paso. Adrian at Enemy Win, the number three, had a suggestion for us about a half hour ago. Steve, in order to rank players in the NBA, we need to break them into the modern era and the classic era. Modern era starting in 1980. Yeah, that's probably all sports. I mean, really. How weird is that the modern era is like 43 years old?
Yeah, seriously. I mean, we're talking about multiple generations, essentially. And it's, yeah, I get it. For some, it's really hard to rank these players when you're talking about totally different eras, totally different styles of play.
Oh, it's so true. It is so, so true. It's like, as a kid, I first started watching sports during the end of the classic era and then just morphed into the modern era. If you really wanted to use 1980 as the starting point.
Yeah, that's a really good point, too, because I think at that point you have more of the merger. Everybody is pretty much instilled in the NBA. It's mostly just the NBA itself. That's probably that point where we can, you know, look at everything historically, at least.
It is funny how you could kind of say that Magic and Bird brought in the modern era of the NBA. If you really want to go in that, if you want to go in that direction.
Definitely.
Really.
Yeah, you definitely can.
So, hey, listen, the NBA has more games, by the way. For those of you wondering, tonight we've got the doubleheader, Knicks and Heat. If you're just joining us and you didn't listen to Adrian during SportsCenter, I don't know why you wouldn't. He always gives you good news there, important news. Jimmy Butler's not playing tonight for Miami. The Knicks say Julius Randle is going to be available, and so is Jalen Brunson. So there you go. The Knicks not screwing around, realizing this is a must-win game, and they're not going to have anybody try to sit out and not play.
Again, I said it the other day, I'll say it again. The Miami Heat remind me of the Army of Darkness, the zombies that just will always come back no matter what. So if you're the Knicks right here, you put your foot on the pedal and you don't let go. You do not stop in this game despite a big lead or anything like that, because the zombie Heat will come back and bite you if you take them for granted.
That's true. That's true. I just wish the Knicks played more like Ash from the movie Army of Darkness, and that's what they need to do. They need to make sure that they can, you know, kill the zombies. That's the best way to put it.
Yeah, I feel like with the Knicks tonight, Julius Randle back and in the lineup tonight as well, it's another big key thing for the Knicks. If they're able to win this one, then go and even it up, you know, reclaim the home court advantage on their side by winning one in Miami for game three on Saturday. I think that's the path to success for this Knicks team.
Yeah, I agree with that. This is a must. And, you know, once again, by the way, we just saw this just a moment ago. Joel Embiid winning the MVP award this year. I feel like that's well-deserved, all things considered. He had a remarkable season.
Yeah, very, very much well-deserved for Joel Embiid. I know the big debate all year long was between him and Nikola Jokic. I'm curious to see who's going to be the last one standing between the two. Jokic looked great last night. It kind of felt like Phoenix dared Jokic to actually beat them in that game. And look at what he does, 39 points and 16 rebounds. Just a dominating performance by him, and Embiid's been great this playoffs too, so I'm looking forward to him returning in the lineup against the Celtics.
How about this? How about the fact that Embiid is the first center to win back-to-back scoring titles since 1974-76?
That's a great stat right there in itself. I mean, it shows his dominance just scoring. He's one of those guys who can get at you early too. He can, when you look up at the end of the first quarter and he has like 15 points, pretty impressive.
33.1 points per game, 10.2 rebounds, 4.2 assists, 1.7 blocks. What a season for Joel Embiid.
Do you feel like this award should be awarded as soon as the regular season ends? Do you like the timing of this, or should we scrap the MVP as we know it and do something when the season's actually over, so we can kind of see, you know, the regular season doesn't mean that much. Postseason means a lot, as we've seen in the playoffs with some of the lower seeds like Miami and the Lakers advancing in the playoffs.
I think I've tried thinking about this, all right? Because, you know, in Major League Baseball, you don't announce the awards until the World Series is over. So all the awards, everything, Manager of the Year, Rookie of the Year, MVP, Comeback Player, all that, it's all Cy Young Award, all after the season's over. I feel like the NFL does it this way. Doesn't the NFL announce the MVP award during the postseason?
I feel like they do too. I think so. I'm going to double check, but I think they do.
So, you know, every league is different. I've I've never understood why during the postseason we need to announce these awards. And my reasoning is it gets lost in the existing playoff matchups that are going on. Like, I like waiting until the season is over, so then you have something to talk about for a day when there's no basketball. You could talk about Joel Embiid and the kind of year he had and do it the right way. I feel like when you do it on a random Tuesday in the middle of the second round of the playoffs, it's lost in translation. That's my biggest complaint when these awards are given out. How does football do it?
Yeah, football was actually right, like you said, right smack in the middle of the playoffs. And remember, they had that NFL honors right before the Super Bowl. So it's kind of weird, too, because Patrick Mahomes ends up taking home the MVP award, and you're telling me that he's celebrating over that despite having to get ready for a Super Bowl on Sunday? No, that's not the case. And so, yeah, I'm with you. I can throw it to our audience and our listeners. I don't know if anybody out there can remember who was announced the Defensive Player of the Year, the Sixth Man of the Year in the NBA, which those awards were just kind of sprinkled throughout the postseason, but didn't get a lot of the shine that they probably deserved.
I feel like that's a really good topic for Dave DeFore today. I really do. I think that's interesting. And I've always liked baseball doing their awards when their season is over, because I feel like, now baseball's got a ton of awards. Remember, you've got one day they do Cy Young, one day they do Manager of the Year, one day they do Rookie of the Year, and then one day they do MVP. So it's like they've got 4 days of awards, and you know, for those 4 days, hey, you talk about it. It's the only baseball that's discussed those days. There's something to be said about that versus just announcing it at 5 o'clock on a Tuesday in the middle of the playoffs.
You're telling me Joel Embiid is out celebrating tonight? No, he's out there getting therapy on his knee to try to get back into this series that he's trying to worry about right now. Sure, it's a good accolade to add to his relevance in the league and where he kind of stands among some of the best players, but why do you have to do it today, May 2nd, right in the middle of the semifinal round of the playoffs?
Good point. It really is. I'm with you on that one. I completely agree. So, but that's the way the NBA does. You know, that's the way they do their awards, and you're not going to change that. You're really not. But there is something to be said when a sport that's over has a day that, you know, you're talking about them. Now, the NBA is different than baseball in the sense that, you know, in baseball, you've got two leagues. So you always have two players each day given these awards. Where in the NBA, there's only one league, one MVP. You're not talking about the Eastern Conference MVP and the Western Conference MVP. You're talking about the MVP of the league.
Right.
So there's your difference.
You know, it's kind of frustrating, too, that we don't even celebrate, it seems like, after the season, any of these guys. Like, we kind of just forget who was the MVP, and we just kind of crown that finals MVP as the guy for this past season. Like, from last year, you kind of just crown Jason Tatum and guys like Steph Curry, because they're the ones who brought their team all the way to the finals, and Steph Curry ends up winning that finals MVP last year.
Yep, that's true. Enrique Ortiz gives us a pretty good take. He goes, NFL and NBA should follow MLB's lead is having regular season and postseason awards. Sometimes the best player isn't in the postseason. That's another good point. That's very true. We've seen that happen before as well.
Regular season for some people doesn't matter, and that's why we saw Kawhi Leonard take off so many games. And you know, when the playoffs hit, he goes out of his mind as far as his ability on the floor. But you get to see these stretches and runs by certain players that you didn't see in the regular season. Jimmy Butler did not show this in the regular season, but he turned it up in the postseason. So kind of two different types of seasons when you look at the postseason and the regular season.
Meanwhile, Hoops Hype had a pretty cool list, where what they did was they talked about, you know, the MVPs thing and put it in perspective. Kareem holds the record for most MVPs for one player. He has 6. LeBron is, you know, he holds the record for most seasons with MVP votes, which, incredibly enough, is 19. I mean, think about that.
Oh, man.
19 seasons played with MVP votes. That's That's incredible.
I did not know that stat. That's a great stat. Another one to add to LeBron's. Is it weird that Jokic was kind of ruled out as far as him being possibly a three-peat, though?
That's a good point. You know,
you kind of hold it to a different standard at that point. Hey, don't necessarily give him the third MVP award in a row, knowing that he hasn't done as much as some of the other players in this league as far as postseason success.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. Hey, meanwhile, Michael Jordan comes in at number 6 on the ranking, receiving MVP votes in 13 seasons. So, yeah, that's pretty remarkable. I mean, it really is. LeBron received, four different times he had first place votes: 2009, 2010, 2012, 2013. Second place votes in 2006, 2014, 2018, 2020. And then third place finish in 11, 15, and 16. Fourth place in 8 and 17. And then if you look at the last 4 years, other than the second place finish in 2020, he was 10th this year, 13th last year, and then 11th in 2019. But still, it's pretty remarkable when you start to see that he's getting votes. And Jabbar was 17 seasons. Tim Duncan received MVP votes in 16 seasons. Karl Malone, 15. Shaq, 14 seasons. Jordan, 13. Interestingly enough about Jordan, the first year he received MVP votes was 85. He was 6th that year. Second in 87. I think he missed 86 with the injury. And then he didn't receive any MVP votes in 88. Received second place in 89. I'm sorry, in 88 he was MVP. That was his first MVP season. So MVP in 88, second in 89, then third in 90, first in 91, 92, third in 93, 94 was the baseball year. Comes back in 95, he's 11th. First in 96, second in 97, first in 98, and then went away again. And then in 2002, he was 13th.
That sandwiched Karl Malone MVP year, 96-97. Don't you feel like that should have went to MJ? Like, he should have had at least one more. And you can make the argument for a lot of these guys. Tim Duncan probably should have had another one. LeBron maybe as well. The one that you reeled off that was so interesting to me that I just couldn't stop fixating on was Duncan's 16 MVP awards. I mean, whenever you had
16 votes.
Or votes, right. The votes for him to be an MVP finalist. But it just shows that Tim Duncan, whenever he was on your team, a la the San Antonio Spurs, he was kind of like a guaranteed 55-plus win season just for simply having him on your roster.
That's true. Kobe also 13 seasons. He received votes like Jordan. Same for Olajuwon. Russell, 12 seasons. Bird, 12 seasons. Magic, 12 seasons. Barkley, 12 seasons with MVP votes. Nowitzki, 12. Stockton, 12. Chamberlain, 11. Moses Malone, 11. Oscar Robertson, 11. Chris Paul, 11. And then you got Kevin Durant, 10 seasons, with David Robinson, Kevin Garnett, Jerry West, Isaiah Thomas, all 10. Interesting list.
Yeah, definitely interesting list. I feel like of those names right there, the ones who can continue to add to their, I guess, MVP finalists, the one name that I didn't hear was Steph Curry, which I'm interested by how many he can end up when it's all said and done. Giannis, still kind of a younger guy. Where will he be when it's all said and done? A lot of people consider him one of the best players, at least right now.
Giannis is at 7 right now. 7 for Giannis.
It's pretty good. Nice.
Yep. I mean, yeah, and he's got he won in 2019 and 2020, third place this year and last year, fourth in 2021. You mentioned Steph, so just for the record, Steph Curry, 9 seasons.
Okay, that's still pretty good.
Winner in 15 and 16, third place in 21. Did not receive an MVP vote this year.
Yeah, that's right.
Go.
Yeah.
Anyway, all right. 17 past. Dave DeFore next, right after Charlie 1 and this traffic update. Welcome back, everybody. 22 past the hour as we continue. This man has been very generous with his time over the course of the postseason, giving us an opportunity to chat weekly. We love that. Dave DeFore back from theathletic.com, not to mention his podcasts. You got the Daily Ding, YouTube. You've got the channel as well on theathletic.com, which if you have the app, it's the easiest way to check it out and access everything. And Dave, welcome back to the show. How are you today?
I'm good. I'm back. I'm happy to be here. We're back. We're getting LeBron and Steph again. Good time to be watching the NBA.
Before we talk LeBron and Steph and the Knick game, which is coming up here in the next few minutes, we were talking about Joel Embiid winning the MVP. And specifically, should the NBA take a cue from Major League Baseball and wait until after the season to announce the MVP award, where it'll have the award all to itself, that nobody will be talking basketball outside of that big award that day, instead of it in the middle of the postseason, kind of, I don't want to say it's an afterthought, Dave, but everybody's thinking about what you just mentioned. Steph and LeBron, NBA playoffs. Should the NBA think twice about announcing these big awards during the postseason?
Do you remember that they did this? You completely forgot about it because that's how much we all hated it. They did an awards show just a couple of years ago. They waited till after the season. We all hated it. They went back to the old way. And the idea was, you know, traditionally it's the MVP is in the playoffs. And they would award the MVP in the arena. They would announce it that day. They would do the, you know, the trophy presentation. I don't know what happened here and why they dropped the ball. I think, you know, that's what I would like to get back to. Why did it have to be today? Why couldn't it have been when the Sixers get their first home game, you know, in game three, you announce it there in front of the home crowd? We don't need to do this suspense thing for television. Just let it's a fan award,
yeah,
in my opinion, right? This is saying, hey, you guys had the best player in the league, the most important player in the league. Let's celebrate that together. I think that's what I would like to see, because then it is an actual bigger moment versus just releasing. I mean, the MVP is not even playing tonight. None of the top three guys are even playing tonight. It's a weird day to release it, but I'm not a fan of waiting till the end of the season.
Okay. Well, I mean, I don't want to see an award show. I think that's stupid, but I mean,
awful.
Yeah. But what I'm saying is, when the baseball awards are given, one day we find out who wins Cy Young. One day we find out who wins Rookie of the Year. And for that one day, we're talking baseball. We wouldn't be talking it otherwise. But you know what? Those guys get they get what they deserve. They get their names being talked about a lot that afternoon and that night. And then we remember that. I didn't really want to see NBA have to do an award show to do this. But, you know, what if somebody ever wins the MVP who's not even playing in the postseason? Then what?
Well, we usually know these award winners beforehand anyway. You know, like with the way that media has gone and with the way that, you know, nobody can really keep a secret anymore. So you almost have to just get it out when you do. And kudos to TNT and the NBA. Nobody got the scoop on the MVP. Every other award, I'm pretty sure someone got a scoop on, but not the MVP. They actually get to save it for TV for once. So, I mean, I think like, The fact that the NBA kind of builds more TV moments around these awards now than anything else, you know, they try out the award show. Nobody cared about it. Nobody watched. It got people to tune in to this, maybe this game that nobody's going to watch between the Heat and the Knicks, since no one's playing tonight because everyone's hurt. So I don't know. They didn't give any weight to it to me because they didn't do it in front of the home fans. I think that's the right way to do it. You know, let them celebrate it with their guy.
By the way, for Joel Embiid, it's pretty amazing. I mean, what, 10 years ago, this guy was playing JV basketball. And now he's a back-to-back award winner. He's dropping 33 a game as an average along, you know, just he's a dominant force player. It just goes to show you that even if your game is raw in high school, if you get proper coaching and proper development and you grow into your body, you could turn into an absolute force of nature like Joel Embiid.
Well, he also is, you know, maybe top one percentile of all athletes maybe to ever live, not just with his size, because he's absolutely massive, but also his skill. I mean, think about it. This guy moves so well. I mean, you ever seen a guy 7'1", 300 pounds, Euro stepping? I mean, it's like shades of young Shaq, but bigger. And just an incredible athlete, great hands, a preternatural ability to just have touch on the basketball. I'm not sure where that even comes from, because he grew up playing soccer. So it's not like he had these incredible ball skills like Jokic seemed to have grown up with. You know, he grew up playing basketball and playing sports like that. So, but for Embiid, yeah, I mean, it's what a development story from a guy who just raw talent and has honed it into, you know, what I guess this award kind of signifies as the best guy this year, which there haven't been very many of those in NBA history. So, yeah, huge, huge success story.
And meanwhile, Dave, look what happened last night. No Embiid, no problem. James Harden gave you a, you know, he's like back in a time machine last night. He put together a vintage performance, and the supporting cast was there for him as well. They hit the big shots down the stretch, and they did something that nobody really thought they were going to do. Stun Boston on the road in game one.
Well, the Celtics defense and the Celtics offense really let them down, and they allowed Philly, and I know that sounds like a backhanded compliment to Philly, but the truth is the Celtics defense was awful. They made no adjustments. Rob Williams is kind of being, misused by Joe Mazzulla. He's not getting him into rim protection scenarios enough and using him more center field as a helper. I think they need to get to that, which was so successful for them last year. And then on the offensive end, they just, in crunch time, they just fell apart. Marcus Smart was just kind of awful down the stretch, had a bad turnover, some of the flopping, just trying to get to the line, and it just works against them. And, you know, they almost won this game. Let's not forget, James Harden stuck an absolutely massive shot to beat the Celtics. So it's not like the Celtics got dog-walked, but they certainly didn't seem prepared to play this team without Joel Embiid, at least not play as hard as they did. The Sixers, you know, credit to them. They played hard. They did not come in with a losing mindset, which is so huge when you lose your best player like that. James Harden was ridiculous, which we somehow forget that he's this level of player because, you know, he tends to coast all season long, especially playing alongside Embiid. But the guy has been, you know, we know he can deal it, though. But 45 points in a second round game one on the road against the Boston Celtics and that defense, that guy can still cook. So there's a little bit more of a 1A, 1B situation in Philly than I think anybody realizes. And for the Boston Celtics to lose game one, I mean, everything at this point with Philly, it's house money. Because if Embiid can be back for game three, let's say, and it's 1-1, I put the Sixers in the driver's seat of that series because I just think Embiid is the best player in this series if he's healthy. And that in the NBA is one of the most important things as we continue to see series after series after series.
As part of that doubleheader yesterday, the Nuggets put it on the Suns by 10. Jokic really helped distance themselves in that fourth quarter. And out of that game, we find out that Chris Paul is now expected to be reevaluated due to that groin injury he had. The Suns right now are preparing without Chris Paul for games 3 through 5, sources told Sham Sharania. Dave, that's huge news right now coming against the Suns. But even with Chris Paul, I don't know if they win this series the way that the Nuggets are playing and on the same way the way that the Phoenix Suns are playing on their side.
Well, Nikola Jokic had a bad game one, I would say. If you watch that game, he was bad in that game, and they won that game running away. Jamal Murray was awful in game two, his worst playoff game of his career, I think. It was awful. And Jokic was incredible, right? 40-point triple-double, basically. And they win that game. And I thought by the end of it, it wasn't even close. The Nuggets just really ran them out of the gym down the stretch. The Suns have no depth whatsoever, and they just lost their starting point guard. I mean, they haven't been able to get quality minutes at the backup one in the playoffs. They haven't been able to do it really since they made the trade for Kevin Durant. Campaign out of the rotation. He's not working. Landry Shamet, I mean, if he's in the game for you in crunch time scenario, that's a wrap. It's over. That's who they're going to go after. I think that the Suns just have not enough guys, and they just lost a guy that they couldn't lose. Whether he was good for them or not, he could at least be not a negative for them on the court. You know he can hit the mid-range shot when Denver wants to go into drop. But now without Chris Paul, who I guess would probably not be back before game six, from what I'm reading into it, an evaluation in a week means really it's probably more likely that he's out for this series. I think that the Suns just don't have anyone else to cover up for what he does, which at the bare minimum, he's a guy who can shoot threes when he's open and can at least set up your offense and get it rolling. But now it's back to Kevin Durant and back to Devin Booker. And so far in this series, they haven't been enough.
More with Dave as we keep things moving here on Sports Talk. But first, Adrian's back, and he's got a quick Sports Center update for us. Out their best player, and the future of this series, I think, is also going to be very much a big storyline right now for them. While the Knicks are going to throw Randall and Brunson back in the starting lineup tonight, along with Barrett, Robinson, and Hart, they have to have this game. But you tell us, Dave, as you kind of saw the way Miami played over the weekend in Game 1, they looked good. They were better than the Knicks in that third quarter. They held them off in the fourth. And now you say without really their guy that kind of gets this thing going, can you expect more vintage throwback performances from Kyle Lowry to find the fountain of youth and everybody else in that starting lineup really to pick things up right now to try to take command of the series?
Well, I mean, the Knicks should have won Game 1. They had it in hand, and they really just could not make shots. You know, we say all the time it's a make-or-miss league, but there's nothing more true in the NBA than that. It really is a make-or-miss league. If you go back and look, the Knicks missed tons of open looks. I mean, Obi Toppin wound up being 4 of 11 for the game from 3, and he missed 3 or 4 that were just wide open. And not that that doesn't happen. That is the NBA. That is why we say make-or-miss league. So I don't think that the Heat really were all that great. I think the Knicks were just bad. The big adjustment that the Heat made was getting out in transition, Kevin Love throwing those outlet passes, you know, that stands out from Game 1. But overall, if the Knicks had just hit shots at a league average rate, they still should have kept that lead and won the game. So I think if you're the Knicks, you want to just keep doing that, which having Julius Randle back in the mix kind of complicates things a little bit for them. I think they make a little bit more sense with Obi Toppin out there, at least with the starting unit, trying to space out the Miami Heat and actually hit them with the math problem by making threes early. And Julius Randle, they could have used him in Game 1 when their offense couldn't get shots and couldn't get shots to go in. He would have been great on the glass, kind of taking advantage of what I think the Knicks have a huge offensive rebounding advantage, especially when they play Randall and Mitchell Robinson together. So Mitchell Robinson kind of got taken out a little bit by the adjustment in Game 3, bringing in Kevin Love. They were able to throw two on him, boxing him out, keeping him off the glass. And in this game, Julius Randle back, if he can give them 80% of Julius Randle, that should solve that problem. So the Knicks, their offense is going to look better just by virtue of having second chance opportunities that weren't available to him in Game 1. So they ought to win this one without Jimmy. But I think for the Heat, you got to hope Jimmy's back as close to 100% as you could possibly be. If he has to miss a game with an ankle sprain, I'm wondering he might be doubtful for Game 3, and we don't see him again until Game 4.
Wow. Be a huge storyline. Meanwhile, we get Steph and LeBron tonight. We get Lakers, Warriors. It's like the gift that keeps on giving because these are two teams that both did not impress during the regular season. But who cares about the regular season, Dave? It's all about just getting into the playoffs and then getting healthy and letting the cream rise to the top, right?
That's it. I mean, I will say this about both of these. And the Lakers in particular, because their team is so drastically different post-trade deadline than pre-trade deadline. If this had been the team, and let's say given relative health, you know, everyone being healthy, I think there's no doubt that both of these teams are much better than they were in the regular season as far as record goes. If you re-ran it again, there's no way these teams are where they are in the standings. It just doesn't happen that way more than once. I mean, the Warriors just won two road games in the playoffs, and they only won 11 all year. So, I mean, just by virtue of that, I think that they're better right now than they were all season long. They also, these veteran teams, they just take it a little bit more seriously this time of year. And you know, I know that both of these teams are kind of a mix of old and young, but the old guys tend to set the tone in the NBA. So, you know, it gets the playoff time. They go a little bit harder. I mean, I think if you look at that first round series, Anthony Davis looked like defensive player of the year level Anthony Davis. And we don't see that from him game in, game out in the regular season. We see it in spurts, but we don't see it every single game. So I just think you've got a level of intensity that we haven't seen for these teams yet. And that's a large part of why they look so much better.
Who do you give the edge to in this one, Dave, going into it? Because on one side, everybody's going to look at the forwards with the Lakers and AD and LeBron, and the other side, they'll look at the Warriors' backcourt led by Steph Curry as kind of the polar opposite matchups for this this series.
Well, I think that, you know, if you're looking at the matchups, I favor the Warriors' defense over the Lakers' offense. I think the Warriors will be able to get consistent stops. I mean, the Lakers are going to need to rely on second chance opportunities. Anthony Davis is going to have to be extremely active on the offensive glass, and they're going to have to hope for kickouts and things of that nature. The Warriors, the Lakers are going to have to worry about getting up threes. They need to attempt threes because you know that the Warriors will, and that math problem becomes an issue very early if the Warriors are making those threes. My issues are on the other end. I believe in the Lakers' defense. I mean, again, I just mentioned Anthony Davis was fantastic against the Grizzlies. He was dominant. I mean, he even had 5 blocks in that last game. I mean, he blocked shots at a Jaren Jackson rate during the regular season. And he did that in the playoffs. That's pretty key to me. Now, I think the Warriors are going to put their guards to the test. The Lakers' guards are not that great. I'm assuming Dennis Schroeder is going to be getting heavy minutes trying to guard Steph Curry. That's not going to go well. But the story is inside. If you go back to the Kings series for the Warriors, they ate the Kings up in the paint. Steph Curry was, I think he had 18 points in the paint out of his 50 in that 50-point game, 7. That is not going to be there against the Lakers because Anthony Davis absolutely owns the paint. So the Warriors are going to have to make shots. I think this has got to be a big Klay Thompson series for the Warriors if they're going to win it. And, man, it's a toss-up to me. It's a fascinating matchup.
Meanwhile, Memphis and Sacramento finished 2-3 in the Western standings this year, and they didn't survive into the second round. So is the message here for the casual basketball fan, don't even watch the regular season, because what good is it, Dave? 51 wins means nothing if you can't get yourself out of the first round of the postseason.
Well, I mean, you know, not to get too philosophical here, but I'm a little bit of a nihilist myself. I think if you just like basketball, you should watch the regular season. You know, I mean, it's a good product, right? Like, basketball is fun. It's a great sport, and there's a lot of it. There's 1,230 NBA games in the regular season. But as far as the regular season and the playoffs, they're different sports. We've known this for years, and I think that with league parity, it's almost gotten worse, and it's not quite as bad as hockey where, you know, you have the best regular season record in NHL history and they're, you know, beaten in the first round of the playoffs. Like, yeah. The NBA is, I don't think, going to be that. But with the fact that you only have 5 guys on the court, and if one of them goes down, Giannis goes down in 11 minutes into the first round of the playoffs, and all of a sudden the team that's been the best team all season long is vulnerable, and they're out because of the matchup. They happen to face a veteran team. So, you know, some of this is circumstantial as well, right? Like, so we can't just throw out the baby with the bathwater. Injuries played a huge role in this. I think, if anything, our takeaway should be the regular season is too long. It's too strenuous because the money part is when you get to the playoffs, and every single team this season has been affected by an injury in the postseason, even Memphis. No Steven Adams, no Brandon Clark, 2 huge losses for them and the way that they play basketball. So, you know, every single team has now been affected by an injury in the playoffs. So that's my takeaway. It's not that the regular season doesn't matter. It's that we could make it matter more if we shortened the season and made the games more impactful.
Are you popping on tonight on the Daily Ding? When do you have coming up as far as podcasts go?
We will have the Daily Ding tonight, but I've got the night off. I mean, you never have a night off during the playoffs when you cover the NBA. But I'll be live tomorrow night after the game, the late game. So, but yeah, tonight, no, I'll get the night off. Just going to enjoy Steph Curry and LeBron James and a beer.
Fantastic. Well deserved. Dave, always appreciate it. We'll look forward to having you back and continuing this discussion again next week.
Absolutely. Talk to you guys then.
He's Dave DeFore, folks, and joins us throughout the NBA postseason to talk playoff basketball. Follow him on Twitter at Dave DeFore NBA. That's Dave DeFore NBA. And you'll be all set and good to go. All right, 5:44 the time. Come back with more in a moment. Sports Talk continues. 600 ESPN El Paso. Back here on Sports Talk, 9 in front of 6. After we wrapped up the conversation with Dave, we were talking about Steph, right? And, you know, the emotion that he brings versus all the others. You know, the greats. You talk about Jordan, Kobe, all the greats, and the way they played the game with that mean streak. And when Dave said such an interesting thing, he goes, oh, he had emotion. But the emotion that Steph has brought to the table his whole career is joy. Like, think about that. It's really interesting. Like, he's having a good time. You know, he's not afraid to smile when he misses a free throw. It's not getting mad and looking like he's ready to just pound you into oblivion like some of the other greats have. It's looking like he genuinely enjoys playing the game and has a good time doing it. And it's such an interesting point because we've never really brought that up on the show, is how many of the all-time greats play the game like this? Like, it looks like they're having fun. Yeah, they're competing, but they're not gritting their teeth. They're not talking, you know, they're not ready to just pounce on you the way a lot of the others did with that mean streak. He's got a mean streak, but it's a different kind of mean streak because he'll beat you with a smile on his face all the time, and it's the way he seems to be playing the game.
That's, I guess, maybe why guys like Draymond are so important to Steph, because he can be the aggressor. Draymond could be the one who gets mad at players or starts fights or whatever, you know, instigates different things, whereas Steph has more joy and brilliance that he brings to the game itself, and he's just genuinely happy to compete on a night-to-night basis, which fuels his competitive drive. That fuels his competitive nature when it's all said and done.
But how many guys over the years in all sports, when you watch them compete at that level, look like they're always having fun? That's the thing. I mean, you know, I get it. I still say Jordan's the greatest of all time that I watched, but I mean, Jordan just was better than everybody else, and he had that killer instinct. But to say that Jordan always looked like he was having fun. I remember the game where he hit that shot and he smiled and kind of shrugged. It's a very famous play that Jordan did when he looks at you like, well, I couldn't help it. I'm the greatest. But, you know, for the most part, it wasn't like he played with a smile on his face like he was always having fun. Steph does. And he backs it up. And he's the greatest shooter we've ever seen. But you could argue the fact that no superstar has ever played the game looking like he's had a better time doing it than Steph Curry.
Yeah, think about Bill Belichick and Tom Brady during their runs for the Patriots. They looked like they wanted to kill each other mm-hmm. and everybody on the other team and on their team. Like, there was so much aggression with their leadership and their passion for the sport. Maybe you can make an argument that Patrick Mahomes plays a little bit, a little looser, but even he is out there yelling at his teammates and trying to get them fired up in terms of motivating. Maybe you could argue that Larry Bird had kind of a smirk.
No. Trust me, Larry Bird was the meanest. Was one of the meanest ever seen.
He talks a lot of smack, but he does it with a smile too. Sometimes.
Yeah. I saw Bird was, but there's other times I saw Bird look like he wanted to kill you.
Magic, you could say sometimes a smile, but then yeah, he had that killer instinct with him.
I mean, doesn't it seem like you're always from Steph though? It's always that same kind of reaction, facial all the time.
Right? Because yeah, and he's always going to smile or shrug things off or
chew on his mouth guard.
Yeah, that's right, and that's probably where he throws all his aggression, his mouth guard.
Maybe so. Maybe that mouth guard just takes a pounding. It's chewed on all of the time. It could be. Hey, we got 2 hours in the books. We got one to go. Looking forward to hearing from you as Sports Talk continues right here, 600 ESPN El Paso. 30 minutes with you. Here on a Tuesday edition of the program, Chihuahuas baseball, Tim Haggerty will be joining us, bottom of the hour. I'm going to be heading out to the ballpark for a few tonight. Go check things out. Looking forward to that. watch a little baseball, and then head home a little bit later. Remember I told you yesterday I was watching the, I saw the movie Cocaine Bear?
That's right, yeah.
Then I watched a documentary on that, and then I was falling asleep last night. And you know how sometimes when one documentary ends, something else starts?
Did it start again, the
nope.
movie?
No. You know, I was expecting it to. You know what started instead?
What?
A documentary about Barney.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. What a two documentaries to follow each other.
Do you realize the kind of rabbit hole you can go with streaming services if you just decide to let it run itself and just go from one to another into another, what kind of craziness you get into?
And the problem with these documentaries is they're so well done, you kind of get roped into them, right? I mean, that's the thing.
Do you also understand why it's so hard to watch broadcast television these days? Because these streaming services give you, like, if you had to watch nothing but streaming TV right now for the rest of your life with what's currently on. I'm not talking about like shows that will be created over the next 20, 30, 40 years. I'm just talking about existing content. You will probably have more than enough where you will never get tired, you will never get bored, and you will always find something that's currently on to watch for the rest of your entire life.
If you told me that today, Steve, I'd still somehow binge watch The Office and mm-hmm. probably rerun that show again and some of the other ones that are just kind of my go-to shows. But yeah, it's so true. I mean, the streaming library that we have and all the streaming platforms, it's immense. I mean, the amount of content that's out there is pretty amazing.
And you're an Office fan, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Then you have to get the Peacock app just to watch the Superfan episodes.
I know, because those are only available on DVD, right?
Like, no, they're not. They don't have them on DVD. These are things they're just coming out with. These are brand new things they're just coming out with now. They're six out of the nine seasons in, and every episode is like an average 7 to 10 minutes longer than the original episode.
Wow. Okay, so I've maybe seen bloopers and maybe some bonus footage from some DVDs from The Office, but never anything like that.
No.
I need to see this.
They take all this extra footage and they weave it into every episode.
Oh, man. Now, yeah, this is an Office fan's, I guess, kind of dream, right?
It's
because you just want more of The Office after watching it time and time again. I need to get Peacock. I just got Paramount Plus and Showtime, the bundle together, mm-hmm. so I need to add Peacock to the mix.
All right. What'd you get rid of?
Nothing. So that's the bad part. I gotta axe something. Maybe Hulu will be on the axe. I don't know.
31-29, Knicks leading the Heat after one period of play. That's a lot of offense, Adrian. A lot of offense. And so far, without Jimmy Butler, Miami getting it done from everybody. You know, you look at just who has been pitching in to score. You've got Caleb Martin leading the way with 7. You've got also Max Strus with 6. You've got Bam Adebayo with 5. You got a couple of guys with 3. I mean, it's a team effort. Whereas for the Knicks, basically, two guys has 26 of their 31 points. 16 for R.J. Barrett, including 3 of 5 from downtown, and Julius Randle has 10. I mean, Jalen Brunson only has 3 points on 1 of 4 shooting so far.
Wow, it's a weird start so far for the Knicks. For the Heat, we're seeing everybody. Haywood Highsmith. I didn't even realize he was still on the team. He went to Wheeling Jesuit at college, Steve. He is a guy who probably has been through their G League system, and another example of Eric Spoelstra, Pat Riley, and the great front office the Miami Heat have in order to kind of like execute and swing and actually hit on some of these underdeveloped prospects that they have on their roster.
Yeah, it's so true. And yet, you know, they're hanging tough. That's what they need to do. They need to battle. Listen, if the Knicks lose to a Jimmy Butler-less Heat team today, that is a major, major concern. That could be a sweep in that series.
That would be really frustrating, too. I mean, the fact that the Heat, they're hitting three-pointers, that's really the big key for them. I think that's what their game plan is tonight. Just sell out on the three. You live and die by it. And, you know, if you can get hot, you can actually steal this one on the road as well.
That's very true. So, tonight, game one expectations as the Lakers and Warriors get ready to battle at 8:30?
I expect LeBron and AD to exert as much energy as they can in this game one. We've seen this in historically from LeBron-led teams, that he is one of those guys who always puts a lot of emphasis on that initial game one. My curiosity comes with this team wondering, how will AD and Davis hold up under the stress of kind of playing every other night or every other night, you know, in this series? These guys are older, and I want to know, how healthy is LeBron? He dealt with that foot injury for the duration of the spring. How healthy is he going into this series against the Warriors? They're going to need him at full strength in order to beat Golden State.
Don't you almost feel like even if LeBron is not 100%, you know that he'll still give you everything he's got, and he's one of those guys that understands that at this point in time, hey, it's going to be one of his last shots at this. So he's not going to, you know, as long as he can walk up and get up and down the floor, he's playing.
Steph is 3-1 against LeBron all time in their finals and playoff records. So Steph Curry holds the advantage against LeBron. LeBron wants to try to make this a little closer. Imagine going down 4-1. Like, this is also a legacy playoff series.
Hard to believe that these two over the years have only played each other four times in the postseason.
Very interesting, right? I mean, you think of all the times we remember to reflect back on Golden State versus the Cleveland series, LeBron getting the best of him in 2016 and actually winning that MVP, or excuse me, the NBA Finals that year. The year before, the Warriors win it. The year after, the Warriors win it again. And same with that year with Kevin Durant. And now it all comes back here. Like, we haven't had this LeBron versus Steph matchup in a while, it feels like.
Meanwhile, while the Warriors and Lakers get ready to play tonight, Dodgers are hosting the Phillies tonight at 8:10. Bryce Harper back in the lineup. This is the fastest recovery from Tommy John surgery ever in terms of position players. Nobody has come back this soon from TJ. Then again, Bryce Harper he's different, isn't he? He's on a different level when it comes to his athletic ability and what he's been able to do as far as recovery.
Tony Womack was the last one. He former infielder, 182 days after Tommy John surgery. He was the only one to have this, or he was the quickest one to recover from Tommy John surgery before Bryce Harper. And look at this. I mean, look at that kind of turnaround right there. We thought he'd be unavailable until all the way to the start of July, right, Steve? And the fact that he's already back, that's pretty amazing. I love this story right here. I'm curious to see how he does tonight in the DH role.
He's going to DH. They said he might play some first base later in the year. Probably no outfield till next season. But who cares?
Yeah.
Bryce Harper back on May 2nd. All he misses is a month of the season. That's unbelievable for Philly fans.
Well, it could come at a really good point for them, too. I mean, the Reese Hoskins season-ending injury, you mentioned first base. I'm curious for him to play at that position if that ends up being the case for him.
Meanwhile, the Guardians are beating the Yankees tonight, 2-0. Gerrit Cole, who has a 1.41 ERA, has given up two runs, has not pitched particularly well, and on the flip side, a young rookie named Tanner Bibby is currently blanking the Yankees on one hit through 3 2/3 innings. If the Yankees lose, they're under 500, and I know it's early and it doesn't mean anything, but still, that has got to be one of the bigger surprises we've seen, even with all the injuries, including now Aaron Judge out.
Yeah, if they lose this one, I think it's 8 of their last 10, Steve. So that's also, raises a lot of concern for this Yankees team early into the season. Early, they can obviously turn this around. But how do they turn this around? That's where I spin it back to you. What's the solution to kind of turning this season around, even though it's early, right?
I mean, you look at the Yankee lineup, right? They still have Rizzo. They still have LeMahieu. They just got Harrison Bader back in the lineup. But they're playing guys like Willie Calhoun, Osvaldo Cabrera. You've got Aaron Hicks. You've got the young rookie Volpe in the lineup now. I mean, there's probably three or four regular everyday stars, and there's a bunch of guys that you're having to plug in, and that rotation is a mess right now. The Yankees, they've lost players due to injuries. They were supposed to have Frankie Montas. He's not there. Severino hasn't pitched yet this season. So they've been dealing with the injury bug like a lot of teams have, and, they're just trying to keep themselves above water.
I know that in the AL East, this talk right now is Tampa Bay, and obviously here how the Yankees have started off the season. But, man, the Orioles have been such a great story, too. I mean, conversely, besides the Yankees, they've been the more exciting story out of the AL East, yeah. Not named Tampa Bay.
19-9, pretty amazing when you start to think about it. They've been really good, and you're 100% right about that. They've done all the right things so far, and it's worked for them. It's been a fun start to the season, hasn't it? Arizona's playing well. They're winning games. Pittsburgh is having a terrific start to their year. You mentioned Baltimore. And these are all small market clubs that aren't spending a lot of money right now doing great.
Yeah, and talk about some of the ones who are disappointing right now. What's going on with the Cardinals? What's happening right with them right now? The Giants are off to a kind of a weird start as well, and same with the Phillies. So, you know, you look on the other side, there's been some disappointments in the in Major League Baseball to start things off. And the White Sox, 8-21. What happened?
They're bad. The Cardinals are a mess at 10-19. They got a brand-new manager. It's not going well for them right now. You're right. There's bad. We understand why Oakland is 6-23.
Okay? Yeah,
we
right.
get that. But some of these other teams, they should be better than that.
St. Louis was supposed to be a lot better this year.
Yeah, you're right. Houston's got injuries galore. They're still 16-13. I mean, and they are battered with injuries. Battered.
And they seem like they can beat teams in a big way still. I mean, I'm just so impressed with the Astros at times. They're one of those clubs that you just can never count out despite the injuries.
Nope. And Toronto's having a good start to their season, 18-11. They've been a lot of fun. Even the Red Sox are over 500, so you start to think about it like that. So, yeah, it's definitely a pretty good topic and story to talk about, and hey, maybe something we can ask Hags about when he joins us next. Tim Haggerty live from the ballpark right after Charlie One, and one last traffic update, 14 past, as Sports Talk continues.